Welcome back to another episode of The Political Life. And today, we are very excited. We are going back to K&L Gates, and we're moving up the ladder. A while back, we had interviewed Stephen Martinko. Stephen has moved on to a new opportunity, not a competitor. He has gone in-house at ByteDance. And today, we are going to talk to the leader of that practice at K&L Gates. He is the co-chair of the Public Policy and Law Practice Group, and he is a government affairs counselor. I met him when we interviewed Stephen, and I really like him. And he's been in the business a long time, and he is managing probably about 50 people. I don't know if it's 50 lobbyists at K&L Gates, which is a big practice. They are continually in one of the top firms in Washington, D.C., and we have been talking about having Daryl Connor on the show for some time, and we are very excited to have him here. Daryl, welcome.
Jim, thank you very much. I'm really excited about having the conversation. It's an interesting business that we're in, and lots of stories to tell.
Well, the thing that I find interesting about what you do and some of the other people we've had on the show who are part of a very large law firm, very successful practice. So not only are you managing, you know, a business of 50 plus people and 150 or 200 clients and all of that, you're also interacting with a very large law firm and everything that goes along with that. So you're, in addition to taking care of your own book of business, so you have your own book of business, running the DC office and interacting with the big firm. I kind of see it as three hats, and none of those seem quite easy to do. And so how you juggle all three, that must be difficult.
Yeah, Jim, it is very interesting. I mean, we are an 1,800 person law firm. The old adage is the sun never sets on K&L Gates because we're a global law firm. And as we look at our practice, you know, we are one practice in the Washington, D.C. office, a fairly significant practice, as you've noted, one of the larger lobbying law firms in Washington, D.C. And we interface with our D.C. managing partner, our global managing partner, and of course, we service our clients. And it is it's a big dynamic, to say the least.
And how many years have you been at K&L Gates?
Yeah. So I started at K&L Gates in 1993. So 28 years in February. Just before that, I worked on the House Merchant Marine and Fisheries Committee.
And how did you end up at the at that committee?
Yeah, it's a good story. So I graduated college and didn't know really what I was going to do. I was a business management major and had some odd jobs. And then I had a friend of mine who worked on Capitol Hill say to me one day, "Why don't you come work on Capitol Hill?" And I responded, "I don't know anything about politics and policy. I'm a business management major." And he half jokingly said, "We don't either. Come on up. You'll enjoy it." And he helped me get the job on the Merchant Marine and Fisheries Committee as a staff assistant. And I just fell in love with it, quite frankly. And public policy and doing good is a lot of fun.
And did you know anything about Merchant Marine prior to working on the committee?
No.
My guess is not.
Lifelong Virginian, the largest body of water we had in my community was a small lake. So it was a true learning experience for me to be at the front office of the committee. So I got to see pretty much everything that was going on the committee. And then, frankly, the firm was one of the best in the business, still is, on maritime and fisheries matters. And so I got the opportunity to move over to the firm, and it's been great.
And so for our listeners that aren't familiar with it, what does the committee have oversight on, and what are some of the responsibilities that you had to deal with?
Yeah. So the Merchant Marine and Fisheries Committee is what it sounds like. It handled domestic maritime policy and fisheries matters. When the Republicans took over control of the House in the mid-90s, they disbanded the committee and dispersed the various jurisdictions at Merchant Marine and Fisheries among the Armed Services Committee, the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and the Natural Resources Committee. So, you know, there's been a lot less focused attention on those matters, and So it's a very different lobbying environment than when I worked there.
And how many years were you on the committee?
I was not only there, but about 2 years.
2 years. And was there, what was the biggest issue that you all had to deal with at the time? Do you remember?
Yeah. That's a long time ago, Jim. I'm not sure I can remember what the biggest issue is, but, you know, in the maritime sector, it's pretty much the same issues that we deal with today, which are the policies that are designed to ensure that our country has adequate capacity to meet its needs for military and commercial movement of cargo. And we've seen a decline in U.S. flagships over the years, and it's driven by U.S. policy.
And so you still to this day do a lot of work in that area. Can you tell us a little bit about your work?
Yeah. I will start by saying that to people that their goods don't magically show up on the shelf at the store. You know, 90% of the world's cargo moves by water. And so it's a very interesting topic, but not one that's front and center in the public debate. So, you know, as I said, I kind of worked on the committee and then came over to the firm, which had a very robust maritime and fisheries practice. And so I spent a lot of my time looking at these kinds of issues and trying to work through, you know, the policies that affect maritime and fisheries.
And I would imagine you have to spend a lot of time at federal agencies, not just on the Hill.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say 70% of my work is kind of at the congressional level. Well, it's probably 50% at the congressional level, 25% at the agency level, and then 25% is really just strategic guidance to the clients in this process.
So this year, you know, in a normal year, there's always a lot going on that's underneath the radar screen. And I've heard you talk about that in the past, that even when there's things are very partisan and it seems like nothing's getting done, there's always things being done underneath the radar screen. Business usually moves along, even in partisan times. So this year you started, it's January, you probably had plans, had a budget, had an idea of what you were going to do. And then March comes, the pandemic hits, all plans are thrown aside, and probably drinking from a fire hose, I would imagine, best describes what happens at a firm like yours when you have all these companies and institutions trying to respond to this pandemic. What has this year been like for you?
Yeah. Well, it's been a strange long year, let's say that. And the only thing you forgot there is that we started the year with an impeachment process, which is really amazing to
isn't it amazing that, isn't it? That I very good point. It's almost like we've forgotten it. And at the yes. time, yeah, it's and it's amazing now that you bring it up as a tangent, it wasn't even a factor in the election.
No.
It's really incredible.
Yeah. No. So we started with impeachment. You know, we have, data that goes back on our practice many years. And so we anticipated, as has been the history with our presidential election years, that it would be a down year for us. I mean, elections tend to get people out of town campaigning, and there's a fair bit less work that goes on in the lobbying business. And then, of course, the global pandemic threw that completely out of the window. I mean, we've spent, almost $4 trillion of, trying to prop up the economy and businesses and individuals. And so when March came, I mean, really all hell broke loose. You had clients, not just of our practice, but of the firm, really wanting to know what was going on, what was going to happen. And so there was this big explosion of work for us, almost overwhelming, to be honest, Jim. You know, our team was tired because of it. And of course, you layer on top of that we were all moved to very rapidly to a remote work environment. So the ability to collaborate and really do what we normally do on a day-to-day basis changed pretty dramatically.
And I can't imagine what it has been like interacting with policymakers during this remote time when they're spending $4 trillion and so much of it impacting your clients. Has that transition been tough? And I mean, they haven't had this kind of activity in this short a span of time, you know, really ever. What has that been like dealing with the CARES Act and stimulus packages and doing all of that remotely?
Yeah. Well, it certainly changed the environment, no doubt about that. I mean, there was no more meeting with members and staff, catching them in the hallway or in the, you know, Longworth cafeteria and having a chance to talk to folks. So you had to be much more deliberate about your outreach. You know, I'd say one of the advantages that a firm like ours had in this process, and you mentioned this at the outset, we have about 50, you know, lawyers and professionals in the business. And so, you know, we were able to leverage literally thousands of relationships that we have on Capitol Hill and at agencies and things like that. So for us, you know, it was a challenge because it was a remote working environment, but because we, you know, we've got people who have long relationships and, you know, ability to reach out to people, we managed pretty well in this dynamic.
And what's your overview or your sense of the latest CARES Act, the $900 billion that passed? I'm sure that's been keeping you busy. And
I'm still reading.
You're still reading?
5,593 pages. So we're still going through it and learning lots of things in there. If you think about that bill, it was not just the COVID relief package, but it was the fiscal year appropriations for the next year and a bunch of cats and dogs in there. So we're still picking up pieces of the puzzle and advising clients on it. Just had a call yesterday with one.
Now that that has passed, the only thing left to do is we have the Georgia 2 Senate races. So let's start there. What does next year look like if Republicans retain control of the Senate? And what does it look like for President-elect Biden and the Democrats if the Democrats take control of the Senate?
Yeah. Well, you know, if the Republicans maintain control of the Senate, I think it's largely a status quo situation where the House is Democratic, the Senate is Republican, and, you know, there's going to have to be compromise in order for legislation to be passed, much like it has been over the last couple of years with divided Congress. Obviously, the margins will be narrower or likely to be narrower in that process. Certainly in the House will be the case. So I think that, you know, for the Democrats, the challenge probably is a little bit more difficult in the House because of the narrow margin. And in the Senate, I think it's still the same as it always is. I mean, you really, in order to pass legislation in the Senate, you've always had to have pretty good majorities in order to move things forward.
And I know you don't have a crystal ball, but if the Democrats do take control of the Senate, you don't hear too much anymore about the filibuster. Is that something that will come up and be considered?
Yeah, I suspect there will be a debate about it, but I think that there are a couple of members who have objected to changing the filibuster rules. So I think it's going to be a challenge to change those.
And my sense is that President-elect Biden, you know, he would probably err on the side if, you know, if had a was able to weigh in, would probably choose not to do away with it, is my sense. Someone who spent so long in the Senate.
Spent a long time in the Senate, didn't he? But he will be the president and he will want things to happen. So, you know, perspective may well change.
It may change. And Senator McConnell seemed to have a working relationship.
They do. They do. They've worked together many, many years in the public sector.
And so when you are talking to clients, what are the some of the common questions or areas that you have to, is it like this, clients asking you, what do we anticipate happening and how should we prepare ourselves? Is there a typical conversation that you have with clients? I mean, you have over 150 clients across the country, really probably across the world. Is there a common denominator of those conversations?
Yeah, I'll answer that question real quick. I want to make one note about if Democrats take control of the Senate, because I failed to mention it. There's an interesting situation in that the Senate, the new Congress starts on the 3rd. The race isn't until the 5th. And so they will sit the Senate with a Republican majority no matter what. And then if the Democrats take control, then there will be a change in control in the Senate. So they will set the Senate based on the 3rd, and it may change based on the 5th, which has happened before, and 50-50 Senate. But it affects kind of the negotiating leverage between the parties and things. So it could be a very interesting dynamic based on the outcome of the Fed.
And so do they set certain procedures and rules?
Yes.
Between the 3rd and the 5th?
They have to have some operating for procedures, right?
And then could those change after the 5th if the Democrats take control?
They very well could.
Oh, wow.
That's correct.
This is, yeah. You're going to be spending a lot of time on the phone.
True palace intrigue. So, you know, when we look, you know, clients are obviously very anxious. You know, we looked at some analysis recently, and there were, I think, seven change elections between 1960 and 1999. Since 2000, there have been nine change elections, meaning that either the White House or the Congress changed. And, you know, that changes the agenda, it changes the entire process, it changes the negotiating patterns. And so it's become a much more dynamic system. And I think people look at it and say nothing happens in that circumstance. And Jim, you and I have talked about this. You know, the wheels of government churn constantly, whether that's in Congress or in the executive branch, and a ton of stuff happens behind the scenes. You know, for us, most people pick up and see what they read in the paper, the stimulus stuff, you know, the appropriations, you know, the big picture healthcare issues. But there are lots and lots of little things that happen behind the scenes that affect specific industries, and especially highly regulated industries. And so there's a lot that happens irrespective.
You know, and as you just mentioned, particularly at the agencies, I mean, you know, business just goes on. You know, recently they came out with new regulations for drones and, you know, a huge step forward for people working in that space. And the agencies don't, you know, they don't stop as they shouldn't. They have regulations to write and business goes on and it just continues.
Well, and if you think about change elections, you know, we're going to go from a Republican administration to a Democratic administration. And, you know, in some cases, it will be a 180-degree turn. In other cases, it will probably be a marginal turn on the regulated environment and the regulatory work that they're doing. So, you know, as our clients look to next year, they're really wondering, you know, what are the big changes that they need to be worried about? Climate change is clearly one that this administration has made front and center. And at a macro level, you know, what does that mean to people? But when you really look at your business, that's where clients are asking, what does it mean for us? You know, it's one thing to talk about, you know, the climate itself. It's another thing to talk about it in the context of what is happening to their business as a result of it.
And how do we prepare? And Correct. How do we get ready and anticipate what's going to happen?
Right. Yeah.
Right. And so as we look forward to 2021, vaccines are being distributed. You know, the next few months, we're being told they're going to be pretty tough. So the first 100 days of the Biden administration will probably be consumed with dealing with COVID, getting the administration set up. How does, you know, and as it unfolds, how are you seeing 2021 or preparing, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, so I think as I look at our business, you know, our primary role is really as educator. You know, members of Congress don't know what they don't know. And, you know, the goal for us is to make sure those congressmen and women and the agency people that are coming in understand how their decisions affect individual businesses or associations of businesses in that. And so, you know, with new members coming in, I think there'll be a lot of just basic education. You know, what does it mean? How does it work? Those kinds of things. But, you know, the first quarter of a new Congress, and certainly a new Congress with a new administration, tends to be very robust. We have a new budget process, and that is going to be guided now by a new president, not by the outgoing president. We have a COVID situation, and we're going to be talking about what to do about that. Is there more stimulus needed? What do we do to expedite the vaccines? And that's at the federal level. I mean, at the state level, you have a whole series of other things that are happening with stay-at-home orders and things like that. So it is going to be a very difficult first quarter to kind of deal with all of the incoming, if you will, both incoming people and incoming information. And the key on it for us is communication to the Hill and the agencies and to the clients.
And also educating clients.
Oh, yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Managing client expectations is an important aspect of the business. And, you know, most people that are in business, you know, they negotiate items between two parties and they can pretty much come to terms on them fairly rapidly or not. But at least you know an answer one way or another. You know, political dynamic could be very frustrating because, you know, at least in the Congress, you got 535 members of Congress, any one of which could throw sand in the gears. The agency processes move slow for very good reasons. And so they get frustrated. And, you know, what we try to do is just educate them every step of the way as to what's happening, why it takes so long. And in some respects, to be patient, you know, it is a long process.
And how often do clients have to come to DC? Quite often, or how does?
Much less frequently today, let's say that.
Right, right.
And I think that's the question going forward. I was just looking at the congressional calendar, and it's unusual for next year, for perhaps the most unusual I've seen, where the House in particular is going to do what they call committee working sessions, and they're going to allow the members to work remotely during those working sessions. And that changes things because, you know, typically people would come to town and go visit with the members and sit down, and we're into a Zoom environment. And, you know, so I think a lot of stuff is going to just continue to happen virtually. And of course, again, that changes things. You know, if you're on a call with 50 other people, you know, you're less likely to speak candidly about something with a member than if you're in a one-on-one session. So it is an interesting dynamic that we're going to deal with in the lobbying world.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting in that it's, in some ways, it's worse because you're not developing that relationship because you're not in person. On the other hand, boy, it's a lot easier to set up some of these meetings, particularly when you have clients out of town and, you know, they're in Indiana and they don't have to fly in and there's not a direct flight and stay at a hotel and you set up a Zoom call and you go over it and boy, it's a lot more efficient.
The efficiency level is certainly there. You just don't get to the personal level that you do on, you know, kind of face-to-face and one-on-one kinds of things. You know, it's interesting, you know, you ask about the COVID impact and how we operated earlier. The most interesting thing for me was I found it much easier to access the staff. And the reason for that was because typically what's happening is they're in the office, the boss is moving around in the office, he's pulling them into meetings, you know, can you come join me for this? And so their day is not as structured. But with the boss out of the office, not pulling them to walk over to the Capitol, you know, to talk to them, they were much easier to get to and much more accessible. And I think that was a good thing coming out of it, quite frankly.
And when you're working on an issue, do you usually start with the staff? Or does it depend on the office?
Yeah, you know, it really depends on the office and what level of education and involvement the member really has on the issue already. But in general, you start with the staff. I mean, they're the gatekeepers on most of these things, and you want their buy-in on the issues. Otherwise, you know, you're going to run into a buzzsaw somewhere anyway. So, yeah, it's a little bit of both, depending on, you know, what you're trying to achieve. But, you know, it's been pretty good.
Yeah, you don't want to go to a member and then, you know, get the member and then have the staff get their nose out of joint. That would not
No, that's correct.
Not a good approach. Earlier, you mentioned a new budget process. Did you just mean the next year or is there a whole new budget process set up?
Well, so the president is supposed to issue his budget on February 3rd. So that's not long after January 20th. And, you know, we're in the transition phase. And so we're going to find a circumstance where President Biden is likely to delay the issuance of the next year's budget, which will slow the policy process somewhat. And but it will offer guidance very quickly as to the priorities for the new administration. And so people will be watching greatly to understand where President Biden is going to spend his political capital on budget.
And when you are bringing on new people to the firm, what's the training or the process when they come on early on?
Yeah.
Is it really more just like trial by fire? Jim, here's the work. Here's your clients. Good luck.
Yeah. It kind of depends on who it is and what they're doing, you know, obviously. But the reality is we've tried to get much better at it over the years. I mean, the firm has its own orientation process, but, you know, that's really just understanding the systems and process.
Human resources. And all
that. Yep. We as a practice, however, have worked very hard to have a much more practical training exercise with our folks where we teach culture and teamwork and service and integrity and, you know, how to bill your time. I had a former congressman say to me who joined us, you know, I used to be judged every election cycle and now I'm judged in 6-minute increments whether I put in my time. So it can be a daunting task for someone who's never done it. But we go through an orientation process, and it's harder remotely, for sure. We just hired someone from the Transportation Department, George Ricardo, who was a senior advisor to Secretary Chao. And he, you know, integration for him has been more deliberate. You know, we've tried to make sure that, you know, we've got him connected to the right people, that we're getting him the right level of work. But it is clearly different today than, you know, it was, you know, when you could sit face to face and schedule meetings and kind of circulate around the office.
And when you have a young person, when you're giving advice to a person just starting off in the business or just starting off on Capitol Hill, what advice do you give? What does that look like?
So I look back at my career because I started really as a paralegal at the firm, and I had really good mentors, whether that was former Congressman Lloyd Meads or, you know, Manny Ravalis, who's an icon in the business. I really, the thing I tell them is get to know the people. I mean, they have lots of experience that you can learn from. Don't hesitate to ask questions, but also learn the business, you know, and I don't just mean the business of lobbying, but how it all operates and, you know, what works, what doesn't work in it, and lean on people. I mean, I tell most of, you know, the new people that I bring on board, our job is to make them successful. If they're successful, we're successful. So we'll do what we can to support them. They just need to keep communicating with us on what they need.
Well, Darrell, this has been great. Great to have you on and great to hear about your career and the firm. I would encourage anyone, if you're down in D.C. or visiting, to check out the offices of K&L Gates, a beautiful office right off Capitol Hill. And for our listeners out there, remember you can follow us on social media on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. You can also sign up for our Monday morning email. Well, it usually comes out in the morning, sometimes the afternoon, but it does come out on Monday, same day as the show. And we have little tidbits of information in there. You can sign up for that at our website, politicallife.net. And so anyways, we hope you have a great week. Stay healthy, stay safe, and we will see you next Monday.